How are you, my friends? Welcome back to episode 376 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What is going on? I got an awesome episode for you here, and it's actually a little bit different. My good friend and co-coach, co-leader with Ascend, Steve Cavanaugh, and I hosted a 100% content-only private Zoom training for a select group of people back in mid-December, and we had some technical glitches at first, and so a lot of people were not able to get on, but we did have several on, and it was a presentation that my buddy Steve has been sharing in certain parts of around the country on how to work less, make more, get big by staying small, and living life on vacation, something he calls hashtag LLOVE, L-L-O-V. And again, this was a 100% content, and we opened up the lines for Q&A at the end. I want to share this with you as a podcast here. I decided to publish this because we got so much great feedback and we had a lot of follow-up questions. And I thought it would be cool, because you probably were not able to be on the training, to just listen to this. Again, you know, we talked about how to make more and work less, which is counterintuitive to many people. We talked about why getting bigger isn't necessarily better. You know, you hear so much about growing and scaling and getting big and all that. And how you can actually get big by actually staying small, how to live life on vacation, hashtag LLOVE, how to get out of debt using a wealth, a specific wealth formula, improving key relationships in your life. Steve even talks about how to get paid to buy a Tesla, which is something that he did several years ago. He actually got paid to buy the Tesla that he drives around now. So anyways, you know, this is something I shared with my, you know, with my audience. If you feel like you have life and or business completely figured out, this podcast probably isn't for you. But if you're open to a new way of thinking, if you're open to you know, picking up one or two nuggets or maybe even more that can potentially help your life and your business, this is definitely the podcast for you. I'm excited to bring you this this presentation that we did in mid-December on how to work less, make more, get big by staying small, and live life on vacation, which is the art and science of hashtag LLOVE. So without further ado, let's hop right into it.
All right, guys. So here we are. So the art and science of, I call this LLOVE, hashtag LLOV. So this is how to work less, make more by, get big by staying small and live life on vacation. So I'm going to get right into it here. All right. So what to expect today? So I'm going to give you guys some practical tips on how to work less and make more. What it means to get big while staying small and manifest living life on vacation, and how you can do the same in your life. So, all right. So back in the day, I used to play in a band, and I remember being at a practice in like the spring of 2001. And I was at a practice at my buddy Corey's house, and I just got home from spring break, and at home for me at that time was Maryland. And my wife and I would always come down to Southeast Florida where we had family on like Christmas breaks or over spring break. And this happened to be just the time that we were returning from spring break. So, Alex,
yep,
there we go. So
you're good.
So what we ended up doing is I ended up coming home to the band practice. And in band practice, I said, look, guys, I'm moving to Florida. And my buddy Corey, who's the bass player in the band, just said, Steve just went on vacation and didn't want to come home. So, I mean, Alex, have you ever had that happen, man, where like somebody, you've told somebody like a dream of yours and then they just like totally like just in an instant just crushed it?
Multiple times.
Crushed your dream.
Yes.
Multiple times. Just a couple times, right? Dude, that really hurt me, man. It really hurt me. But, you know, in my life, I've used these types of opportunities to just really like motivate me to kind of to show them, you know, like, man, like I'm going to make this happen, right? So nonetheless, like the vision was born there. Can I get this back to where I can just have one bullet point at a time?
You could. The only thing is I won't be able to admit anybody else. So go all for right. it.
Okay. So, So anyway, I come from humble beginnings. So I have, you know, loving parents. I don't have like a hard luck story or anything like that. My parents are like middle class, like government workers. I come from a suburban to rural area in Southern Maryland. I grew up actually on a small farm. So here's the thing. That right there is a chicken trophy, folks. And in case you can't see this, on the plaque, it says Charles County Fair, 1987, Best in Show, 4-H Poultry. That's my chicken trophy. I won the chicken trophy that year because we had a pretty chicken. So I grew up on a chicken farm and got the chicken trophy. In fact, here is a picture of the chicken trophy that I have now behind me.
Oh, man.
On my bookshelf, and here I am with Alex Pardo and John Martinez talking about our mastermind and coaching group, Ascend. So there it is, folks. It's always on my bookshelf behind me to show my humble beginnings. Right.
There's so many directions I can go, and I'm not even going to touch that, but go ahead.
All right. I need the next slide, Alex.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. All right. So bricolage, the concept of bricolage is very important for this talk today. It's a French word, and it actually means making do with the material at hand. Alex, do you remember the show MacGyver?
Of course, man. Everybody wanted to be like MacGyver back in the day.
So let me ask you, what was MacGyver really good at?
He was a handyman, right?
He was kind of a handyman, but what did he do?
Oh, man, I don't even remember. He used to fix everything. That's all I remember. And he had a cool car.
He would fix everything. But he would like save the world with a Swiss Army knife.
That's right. That's right. Right? I was thinking Knight Rider for a second on the car, but yeah, go ahead.
So, okay. Well, MacGyver, he had the Swiss Army knife and he would just take random stuff that was sitting around. And at the end of the show, basically he had saved the world every single time with a Swiss Army knife. So but the bottom line is that he would save the world one episode at a time with the material at hand. So a bricoleur is one who practices bricolage and they are an artist of limits. So I'm sorry, I gotta back up one second. I've got this book here, which is probably one of the best books that I've ever read. It's called Free Play, The Power of Improvisation in Life and the Arts. And I'd like to read to you just a quick paragraph or two here, if you'll allow me to.
Yep.
Antonio Stradivari made some of his most beautiful violins from a pile of broken waterlogged oars he found on the docks in Venice one day. Like the David hiding inside Michelangelo's rough block of marble, or the prophets and sibyls hiding behind the emptiness of his wet, freshly prepared fresco walls, in Stradivari's imagination, the form of the finished violin was tangibly present in the raw chunks of wood. In the same way, to a child's imagination, a twig is a man, a bridge, a telescope. This transmutation through creative vision is the actual day-to-day realization of alchemy. In bricolage, we take the ordinary materials in our hands and turn them into new living matter, the green gold of the alchemists. The fulcrum of the transformation is mind at play, having nothing to gain and nothing to lose, working and playing around the limits and resistances of the tools we hold in our hands. Sometimes we think, if only I had a great instrument like a Stradivarius or a supercomputer with great graphics or a fine, perfectly equipped sculpture studio, I could do anything with it. But an artist can take the cheapest instrument and do anything with it well. The artistic attitude, which always involves a healthy dose of bricolage, frees us to see the possibilities before us. Then we can take an ordinary instrument and make it extraordinary. So, Alex, I need to be there. There it goes. There's a little bit of a delay when I click the button to advance the next bullet point, but I read all that to ask to put the question out there for you guys: is how can we apply this concept of bricolage to our lives? So, I want you to think about that over the next hour as we go into this discussion here. So, the art of life. You know, I view my life as like a blank canvas, and I have the ability to be the artist that is in control of whatever goes on that canvas. So ultimately, you folks out there, you guys are the artists of your lives, right? You have the ability to design and live your own life. You have the ability to paint a masterpiece of your own life using your own rules and no one else's. So here's some tools. Have you ever had this happen, Alex, where you learned something in one discipline or one area of your life? Maybe it's in the gym, or maybe it was in college, or maybe it was in school, and then you have applied a concept that you've learned there to a completely different part of your life. So maybe that's a part of your business or something like that. So this is a transdisciplinary perspective or approach where you're borrowing these concepts from different parts of your life to form your unique perspective, and ultimately that breeds originality out of the creativity in applying those concepts. Has that ever happened to you?
It has. Like, I mean, I can think about sports and applying that, what I've learned there, to different areas of my life.
That's great. That's great. So sports, it happens a lot. The last time I gave this talk, I had like 10 different people share 10 different things. I was so surprised people grasped this concept right away, but it's very, very, very powerful. You know, let me tell you a story about another tool here, and that is go directly toward what it is that you want. How many times, for example, well, I'll tell you a story. When I was first getting started in real estate, I decided it would be a good idea for me to go take the real estate salesperson course. I had no intention of becoming a realtor. I didn't want to become a realtor. Not there's anything wrong with that for you realtors out there. It just wasn't in my vision. What I wanted was to become a real estate investor. But I thought that taking the course would give me some, you know, some information around the real estate industry. So I went and I took it. Now, there were several other people in that class with me that wanted the same thing that I wanted. And again, to become a real estate investor, not an agent. What ends up happening at the end of that class? They bring in somebody that basically sells you on why you should hang your license with them as soon as you pass your test. What ends up happening to people who don't have a vision or don't have this thing figured out is that they'll go along with that and they'll say, okay, well, when I start to make some money by being a realtor, then I'll start to talk about maybe real estate investing or something like that. For me, I said, no thanks, but no thanks. I took the class. I intentionally did not take the test. I didn't even want to put myself in that position where I was going to pass and then have to work for somebody else or work for myself working in a brokerage or whatever the case might be, because I knew that I wanted to go directly toward what it was that I wanted. I just wanted some of the content out of that course to be able to implement it, to further my knowledge, right?
I get it.
So I'm clicking. There we go. So, you know, another quick example of this is I wanted to learn to play jazz guitar when I was in college. I went to my teacher, and I was under the illusion that I needed to learn all this other stuff like classical music and these foundational types of music before I would allow myself the ability to learn and play jazz guitar. So I went to my jazz guitar teacher and he said, well, Steve, what do you want to do with the guitar? I said, I want to learn jazz guitar. He said, well, then let's learn how to play jazz guitar. I said, well, I don't understand. Don't I have to learn all this other foundational stuff first? He said, no, if you want to learn how to play jazz guitar, let's learn how to play jazz guitar. And that was a very profound lesson for me at the time. Okay?
Yeah.
So, all right. So lifestyle design. So this is the Life and Air vision process. For those of you guys who are familiar with the Life and Air, basically you want to build your life first. And obviously you always want to write it down. People don't believe me, but something happens between your brain and then the pen on a piece of paper. Does not happen the same way if you're typing it into your computer. So you want to write it down, what your life looks like in all these different areas. So those of you who have either worked with Alex or I as your coach or have been through the Life and Air vision building process, you have done this already. And then you take these things that you want to see manifest in your life, and then you time block activities that are going to get you there, and you create boundaries around it. So the hours you work, the hours that you spend time with your family, what you do on the weekends, what you ultimately, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me tell you about creating boundaries. So for example, if you're to call me on my phone right now, you're going to get my voicemail, and my voicemail is going to say, my office hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. So I've created a boundary within the voicemail. So I'm now training people that come into my world that, hey, look, this is very important to me when I work. And it's also equally, if not more important to me when I do not work. Just ask Alex, who tries to get in touch with me before 11 a.m. every morning. Right, Alex? Sorry yeah, to do.
I'm the exception, right?
Oh, yes. You're the exception. You and my wife. Don't tell my wife that. All right. So determine how much your ideal lifestyle costs. A lot of times this is less than people think, right? And then you simply build or tweak the business to serve the life using the time that's left over. All right. So Tim Ferriss talks a lot about this in his great book, The 4-Hour Workweek. Highly recommend it if you haven't read it yet. He talks about this. He calls this the lifestyle design. In this book, he talks about a concept that he talks about called the deferred life plan. So this is people that say, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make a bunch of money now in the hopes that I can retire later. This is also very popular in the industrial age. This was the idea of retirement where, you know, again, grind it out now, live later. But he asked the idea in the book, and I asked this idea of you, what would happen if we flip that idea completely around? What if we flipped it on its head? You know, is it possible, Alex, to have great income while working less?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So that's what we're going to talk about here in the first part of this talk today. So how are we going to do that? Let's talk about it. So the first concept I want to introduce you to today is work less and make more, and how I've been able to leverage this concept in my life and business. I'm getting a beach ball here.
All right, I got you.
Thank you. So the first step is to determine your highest level revenue generating activities. And then, can you cue me again?
Uh-huh.
And then we want to do an 80-20 analysis. So many of you guys have heard of this before, but basically what this is this 20%, I need back, there we go. 20% of your activities are going to result in 80% of your results. 20% of your activities will create 80% of your results. So this is just a quick example. This is from Perry Marshall's book, 80-20 Marketing and Sales. Very, very great book if you haven't read it. This is looking at a table here of tasks that essentially are $10 per hour tasks all the way on up, if you followed over from the left to the right, to $10,000 per hour tasks. So some of these are really, really, really interesting. Let's just take the third one down. Cold calling of any variety. That's a $10 per hour task. Writing an email to prospects or customers. That's a $100 per hour task. Building your sales funnel. That's a $1,000 per hour task. And then finally, repositioning your message and position is a $10,000 per hour task, right? And then you guys can go on to read some of these others. Highly recommend you read the book, but it really makes you think about your 80-20. What is the 20% of activities that you need to be focused on, those revenue generating activities in your business that's going to produce the 80% of the result, and then get rid of all the rest? So for example, here's some of mine, my 80-20 activities. So I make the buy and sell decisions that I like to refer to as real estate day trading, making offers, talking to pre-screened motivated sellers. Notice I didn't say talking to every single one of them. Putting together deals, structuring deals, raising money or CFO related tasks, tax planning, things of that nature, developing any sort of marketing plans, reading, thinking, planning, and visioning. This is very important. You know, right now I have in my vision that I make time to think. And so I have to, that means now that I have to time block time to think. And I have to honor my time to think. So I have to treat that as if it's a call with a potential client or home seller or anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. My time to think is as sacred, if not more sacred, right? Very important. So talking to coaching clients and coaching prospects, you know, is again something that produces a great result. 20% of the effort. Communicating with executive team members. All right. So work less and make more. So Gary Keller talks about the path to more is through less. Let's dig into what Gary Keller has to say about this in his huge book, The One Thing. Again, highly recommended if you haven't read it. So The idea is to determine what is the one thing. And in this book, he talks about what's the first domino, the big domino that you can kind of knock over that will knock over all the rest of them, right? What is the one thing that you can do that's going to take care of all the other nitinoid things that's on your plate or in your business, right? So, you know, for me, that is focusing on revenue generating activities, but above all, just focus. You know, guys, as Alex and I are interviewing people that are coming into Ascend, one of the recurring themes over and over again, for you know, in many cases, these are high level people. These are people with a lot of experience. In some cases, you know, we're one of the first things that Alex and I are doing as we're coaching them up is really getting them to focus because they've had exponential success. But when you take that success and that drive that they have in many cases, and you're able to focus that even more, it is amazing in just a short period of time, Alex, the turnaround that we have seen some people make and just their trajectory has just gone like this. It's just been amazing to see. So don't think that lack of focus is something that we don't all experience because it is. And from time to time, you just need to be able to share that with a group of people or with your coach and have them help you really draw out of you exactly what it is you need to be focused on and then hold you accountable to it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, you know, again, the lead domino, it's going to knock over the rest of them. Relearn the lost art of single tasking versus multitasking. You know, like Alex has me only send him communications now in Voxer because if I send him a text in a Vox, now we got to put the two together. And heaven forbid I send them an email, right, Alex?
I knew that was coming, dude. I knew it.
So it's a lost art, but the thing of it is that those of us who single task, which is all of us at any given moment, even though we don't realize it, we're losing productivity by trying to double task. Single tasking is going to allow us to access this very pivotal concept of intense focus, right? All right, I need the next bullet point there, Alex. I've got a beach ball again. Time block your schedule, times for work. And then here's the thing, folks. Work like a dog during your allocated time. So I leave a very small part of my schedule open for work throughout the week. But when I do work, I am going to work my butt off. So I don't want any of you to hear me say that I don't like to work, that I don't work, or that I don't want to work, or any of those things. I love to work, and I want you to hear me loud and clear. But I keep it during a particular time of my day, of my week, such that it does not interrupt my family time, friend time, me time, think time, guitar time, any of those things. Right? Make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Gary Keller says, the people who achieve extraordinary results don't achieve them by working more hours. They achieve them by getting more done in the hours that they do work. All right. So what do you do with the rest of the stuff? Obviously, the stuff needs to get done. Those $10 an hour, those $100 an hour, well, you hire them out, right? And, admin and non-revenue generating activities are going to get delegated out first. So that's stuff like bookkeeping, paying the bills, property management, project management, brokerage activities, and general contracting. So I'm going to rabbit trail very quickly here. W-2 or 1099, these folks, it's my preference to 1099 whenever possible. This helps me keep the overhead low so I can stay nimble. That allows me less exposure to market fluctuations. Have options, much easier to let go of a 1099 than a W-2. Put another way, don't blindly build a large team in the name of growth. Otherwise, you might become one of my favorite buyers to wholesale to. True story. Alex, how many times have you wholesaled to guys who have too big of overhead and they just need to break even to keep stuff going?
Quite
you might
a
not
times.
Want to admit that.
Yeah.
It's like this is being recorded.
Yep.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, I called a wholesaler here locally recently, and I very politely asked her. I said, look, if I buy this property from you at this price, can you please explain to me how I'm supposed to make any money? And she flat out told me, she said, you're not. And I laughed. I said, okay.
I think I know who you're talking about too. Yeah.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of wholesale lists down here in South Florida. She told me, well, look, she said, honestly, Steve, I'm selling this just below retail to guys who have overhead that's too much so that they can break even just so that they can make payroll. So damn, there it is. So anyway, if Alex isn't willing to admit it, she did. Just messing
crazy
with you. All right. So that's that. Let's talk about the next concept here. So let's talk about getting big and what does that mean? So if you want to get big, you're going to get big, right? And I think as entrepreneurs, we have this drive. We have this thing that's like innate, that's internal for us. And we just want to get big. If you want to get big though, you have two choices. And let me tell you a story about how this came about. I was doing a one day deep dive like Alex and I do with our Ascend students here, but I was doing one with my coach and I was up with him in Wisconsin. This is probably 4 or 5 years ago now. And he was pulling me up in his old pickup truck as we pull up. He had a pickup truck that ran on French fry oil from McDonald's. Don't ask. Pretty cool. And so as we pull up to the airport, he's about to drop me off and the smell of French fries wafting in the cold Wisconsin winter air. He says, Steve, you're at the point where you're getting big and you have two choices to make. You can either get big by staying small or you can get big by getting big. So get big by growing bigger and get big by staying small. So go ahead and let's cue the next one there. But first, I want to define this for you guys as we dig in here. Let's talk about getting big. So getting big is efficiently amplifying your essence or your artistry. Remember, it's a blank canvas for us to paint. And efficient just speaks to the 80-20 that we already talked about. So we're going to do that by leveraging the 80-20. The goal is to ultimately increase the profitability. All right. I don't think I've shared anything new with anyone just yet, right? Still with me, Alex?
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
All right. So let's talk about what happens when you get big by growing bigger. By the way, neither of these approaches are wrong. They're just different. You have to select what works for you. But the idea behind growing bigger is to scale your operation. So what that means is increase the number of deals you do and the number of employees that you have, increase your overhead. Somebody who's looking to get big by growing bigger is going to say something along the lines of more is better. Okay. Bigger is better. So if this is the way that you want to go, I'd highly recommend that you read the book Traction by Gino Wickman, because he talks about how to scale your operation and get big by growing bigger. Now let's contrast that with the other side of the coin, get big by staying small. Get big by staying small says, I don't care about quantity of deals, quantity of employees, or even quantity of revenue. I care about the quality of these things. This means oftentimes maintaining a low overhead or staff. And somebody who's interested in getting big through staying small is going to say something along the lines of more isn't better, better is better. Don't scale to get bigger, scale to get better. If you like this type of philosophy, I would recommend that you read the book Company of One by Paul Jarvis. All right. Alex, any questions on that before we move along? Look good so far?
No, I mean, I don't have any questions. I just think that's very counterintuitive to a lot of the messages out there by a lot of the influencers of, scale and grow. And you know, to a certain degree, we kind of fell victim to that in our business. And it's when you have bigger of anything, whether it's employees or deals, there's more complexity. And who is it that Tony Robbins says, complexity is the enemy of, I think it's simplicity, and really the older I get, the more I realize we want things as simplified as possible because you have less moving parts, you can control it more. So that's what immediately comes to mind for me, but go ahead.
Great. Absolutely. So here is the thing. Is this just a concept that we're going to apply to real estate investing or business or no? I would make the argument that this concept can be applied universally. So let me just show you a simple illustration as far as the info space is concerned, because I do run the Southern Maryland Real Estate Investors Group, which is an investors group comprised of 1,500 individuals. Now, some people who run a RIA, which is essentially what I run in Southern Maryland, would say that a membership of 1,500 is extremely low. Many people have lists that are 25, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 people out there, right? But what I have enjoyed through my 13 years, 12 years of running that group has been a very high response rate and a lot of attention from a very small list. So here's the thing. I've gone deep on these relationships, right? So there's a book out there, there's a concept out there, I don't know if it's a book, but there's a YouTube video out there on 1,000 true fans, that you can make all the money that you need to with, if as long as you have 1,000 true fans. Now, I'm not saying the other approach is wrong, but there are some gurus out there that are telling everybody to grow their list as possibly as big as they possibly can and consistently spam that list in order to generate revenue. I don't agree with that. That's not the approach that I have always taken, but that is an avenue that you could go if you wanted to. I'm not here to tell you it's right or wrong, but, you know, so for me, maintaining and operating on a small list, going deep in my relationships has benefited me very well. The key here is to provide value and develop those deep relationships and be loyal to those relationships, right? So I do this by lifting other people up, presenting them with only good value ideas and things out there. So I'm always in it for the long game with my relationships. I'm not somebody who likes to burn through relationships. So here's how to communicate with your followers. But like I said, some of the current best practices say, hey, look, they're on your list. Mail to your list, you know, 3 or 4 times a day. Who cares? Like, just barrage them with your content and everything. And look, folks, those are the first ones that I unsubscribe from. That's just me personally. Maybe you guys like that. But again, I can't dispute that effectiveness of that approach. But, you know, for me, it's always been fewer well-timed and thought-out communications. You know, then for example, coaching offerings. So I am a coach. I've coached for 13 years. Alex and I coach in this group Ascend together. And here's the thing, you know, fewer products and services can often be far more profitable when we're talking about coaching offerings. You know, and a lot of people out there that would be counter to this philosophy might say, well, you have to build this whole value ladder thing out and you have to put all these offerings all the way on every single step all the way up. I don't think that that's the case. I think if you've nurtured your audience in the right way, you can take somebody from a free product, which in my case historically has been my RIA. It's been free. You don't have to pay to be a member. You don't have to pay to attend a meeting. You can come in. It's just like Google search. You can go to Google, type it in right now and search whatever you want. It's free. But if you want to get space with Google, if you want to get a custom URL with Google, if you want to advertise with Google, anything else with Google, you have to pay Google for it. So for me, it's a RIA, it's free. Come on in, it's free. It's like search, it's free. But if you want to take the next step, if you want to actually do deals with me, if you want to joint venture on me with deals, if you want to learn how to do your first 3 deals together, then that's going to be a high ticket coaching product, right? And so that approach has worked very well for me. All right. So ideally, get big by staying small. This is going to be your guiding philosophy from the beginning. Because as Alex and I have found in working with folks that have embraced the getting big through getting, you know, getting bigger by growing bigger philosophy, many times they're coming to Alex and I because they want us to help them kind of unwind that philosophy and restructure. Much harder to do because you're turning around a ship at sea at that point as opposed to, you know, starting from the get-go. But not that it can't be done. We do that, and I think that we do that well. But ideally, this is your guiding philosophy from the very beginning. Let me talk about a concept that I like to call addition by subtraction. Everyone knows addition by addition, but how about if we were to talk about addition through subtraction? Many times, this is something like looking at your client list or looking at your staff, and just sometimes you have to get rid of the bottom 10%. You know, who's going to handle these tasks? What I'm going to lose revenue by dropping my bottom 10% of clients. But what you oftentimes find is that as soon as you get rid of that bottom 10%, you're adding to your upside in an exponential manner. So, Alex, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It absolutely makes sense.
Okay. And, you know, another thing happens too. What happens when there's a market change? Or something along those lines. A lot of times people say, well, you know, my reaction is, okay, what's going to happen in the market right now? I can do one of two things. I can grow out of it by like just doubling down on what I'm doing, or I can slowly pull back, go to the sidelines for a second, see how the game's now being played, and then pick my entry point again. So, you know, and a lot of times too is, I'll tell you this story real quick too. I feel like I'm getting off on tangent, but this is very powerful. I talked to a guy recently, Alex, and he was involved in several different joint venture relationships with several different operators. This was flipping operators in several different markets throughout the country.
Okay.
And so he was talking to me because I was consulting with him on how to grow a coaching business in his local market. And so I was fulfilling my obligation through consulting with him. But as we're talking, I got the sense that he was bogged down by a lot of other stuff that was going on in his other business operations. So I got to asking him about it. You know how I'm good at asking questions. And I said, "Hey, man, what's going on? What's going on with your other business stuff? Do you mind telling me a little bit about it?" He said, "Well, I've got all these different joint venture relationships." I said, "Well, what do they look like?" And he said, "Well, there's about five of them, and they're all different operators in different parts of the country. And each joint venture has a handful, you know, 5 to 7 properties that are going on." I said, "Great. Tell me, what are the status of those operations right now?" And he said, "Man, I don't know." I said, "Okay, does that bother you?" He said, "Yeah, like I don't know what the status is of any of the operators, much less any of the projects where any of them are at. But I know that a cash flow is thin for me, and it feels like all I'm doing is feeding all these different things." I said, "So what in the heck are we talking about you adding a new thing to your plate right now in this form of coaching people? What are we doing that for?" And he's like, "Well, you know, I need to, you know, I have a lack of revenue. So I need to add one more thing onto my plate in order to grow me out of this." Yeah. And I said, "Man, I said, look, I can't in good faith continue to consult with you here because I don't believe that that's what you need. I think you need to practice this concept of addition through subtraction. And whether that means you call it a loss on one or two of those joint ventures, or you just simply pick one or two of them to dive deep on and get them off your plate, yeah, now is not the time to add something else." And he's like, yeah. So I think he got it. But the bottom line is that is addition through subtraction there. So oftentimes, you know, we need to reduce these number of activities to focus on the one thing that produces the largest result. Then and only then we can start to add stuff back on our plate. I'm not against having multiple plates spinning at the same time, but I'm against doing it when you're trying to add more on top in order to get out of all those spinning plates. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make sense. It goes back to what you were sharing, Gary Keller, the one thing, you know, I mean, that's essentially the synopsis of that book and the pumpkin plan and a few others. It's really just dialing in and focusing on what's going to really move the needle for you in your business and in your life.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit more about focus before we wrap this thing off. Bright shiny object syndrome. You know, raise your hand if you've ever had an issue with that. I mean, so many people have had an issue with bright shiny object syndrome, and I just love it. I you know, to me, I think of this as like, you know, there's a bass and it's sitting in the water, and all of a sudden it sees this lure come out of the side of it. Of course, it doesn't know it's a lure. It looks bright, it looks shiny, it looks tasty, and then the bass jumps on it and, you know, sucks it in their mouth hole, and next thing they know, they're being reeled on shore by the fishermen that they had no idea was there. So bright shiny object syndrome is like that. It will come along when you least expect it. It will look bright, it will look shiny, it will look tasty, and you want to jump all over it. And the bottom line is that a lot of times it'll distract your focus, right? So, you know, be careful when you're saying yes to a perceived opportunity, because a good friend of mine, Maria, recently shared this quote with me, and I love it. She said, "When you say yes to something, you're automatically saying no to something else." When you say yes to something, you're automatically saying no to something else. So true. Truer words have never been spoken. So there is extreme power, folks, in saying no to the things that aren't in your vision, even when it's hard. For example, a threat to your significance. Recently, my wife, Carrie, was offered a job here at the local elementary school that she volunteers a lot of her time to. She's the president of the PTO at this school. My wife, Carrie, comes from a teaching background. She was a teacher for 13 years, and she absolutely loves it, loves the school system, believe it or not. And she got a lot of significance out of being offered that opportunity, right? So at first blush, it was like, wow. Yeah, that's a tremendous opportunity for me to take advantage of that, because this is my background. I'll be in the school every day and all that stuff. But then she started thinking about, well, what would I lose? I would lose the autonomy that I have right now. We'd have to hire a nanny. We'd have to, you know, and all these other things, which essentially would have made the income portion of it a complete and total net. I mean, there would be a net zero there. So anyway, the bottom line is that she was able to articulate after a week or so to reflect on it that, look, this made me feel very significant and appreciated to have been asked to take this job, but ultimately I had to say no to it because my vision contains these other items that would be lost. That's a hard thing to do, folks. That's a very hard thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Alex?
It does. Yeah, it does. And I remember you shared that with me when you guys actually ran. See, most people would just jump at the opportunity, but when you actually like thought through, okay, if I say yes to this, I'm saying no to all these other things. And then people just end up making the wrong decision. So yeah. I think most people are just, they make the decisions based on how much money they're going to make versus the other things that are important in their life.
Cool. Hey, Alex, by the way, I do have the ability to admit people here. So I just admitted four more folks on, it looks like. Perfect. And I can see that on another screen.
Okay, yeah, I can. So I think because you're the host, I don't see it anymore.
I'm actually wondering if you could have E get on this, and she would be able to do that probably if you gave her the same access that you gave me. So anyway, okay. So as we're moving along here, let's talk a little bit about income versus wealth. Look, folks, here's the bottom line. So we're constantly, we feel the pressure to put a new spin on things. So for example, doing the next big deal, right? And try to replicate the, I'm going to air quote this, ready? Success that we see on social media. But so much of what you see out there right now, these people aren't building wealth. They're simply high income earners, right? A good friend of mine recently said this quote. He said, we were talking about the Airbnb arbitrage model, which I happen to really think is a pretty neat business model. The guy who said this to me is a tried and true wealth building, buy and hold investor. And at the end of our discussion, he simply said to me, he said, well, you know, that might make you rich, but it won't make you wealthy. The distinction there wasn't lost on me. Do you get the difference?
I do. I'm trying to get E on the, but yes, I get it.
Okay. So here's my formula. This is my formula that I developed through years of working with a coach and a mentor. This is not necessarily the formula that I'm recommending for you guys, but my formula has simply been to annually take money off the table and acquire one or two single family rentals. Okay. Here's how I work this. And then I'll flip the houses to generate the income. Then I'll buy the free and clear single family house rentals. Then I'll collateralize them with a line of credit. And then I'll use the line of credit to write a check to buy another house to flip. And then that allows me to basically rinse and repeat the process. Buy another house to flip, buy another rental, collateralize it with line of credit. You get what I'm saying? So it is it's a snowball effect that takes place for my formula here. So basically what I've got it to is that it has allowed me to operate the business, cover the overhead and my salaries and all that stuff with the rental income, which has essentially allowed me to, everything else that I can just completely book as gravy or icing on the cake. So anytime I do a flip, that's 100% profit. You know, anytime I bring in a new coaching member, that's 100% profit. Anytime I do anything else is 100% profit. Make a hard money loan, any of those things, right? And this formula here is what allowed me to retire down here in Southeast Florida 2.5 years ago at the age of 39. My goal was to do it by 40. So this formula allowed me to do it. So let's talk about this concept that I call compartmentalizing rentals. As you guys see, I'm buying these rentals free and clear. And when I do the line of credit, that's a line of credit that I'll use to flip a property, and then I'll just put that money back. I'm not actually living off the line of credit or anything like that. So please don't hear me that I want you to go into all this line of credit debt, because I don't. But if you can use it as a tool to buy short-term, you know, as a short-term tool to buy more properties and then go pay that money off, then it can work out very well for you. So compartmentalizing rentals. Here's the big idea. So the big idea behind compartmentalizing rentals is to simply take a rental property and designate a singular rental property here to pay for a vision item. So for example here, how to get paid to buy a Tesla. Now, be honest with me. Raise your hand. I can't see everybody, but raise your hand if you're on this call because you're interested in this portion of it. This is actually pretty cool. Whoa, we're kind of all, right, flying all over the place here, Alex.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Let me get you to the Tesla.
I want to get to the Tesla. Okay. All right. So go to the next slide, Alex, and then we're going to hit the pause button right before we get into the Tesla thing. I just want to kind of take a quick water break here.
All right. Cool. Let me see if I can get Eon as well.
Okay. So obviously Alex and I have started this new group, Ascend. I see a number of Ascenders on the call here already. So it's awesome to have you guys on here. And so I'm about to talk to this compartmentalizing rental strategy and how I have used this strategy to here. E is trying to hop on here. Here she is. So how I've used this strategy to help some of my students essentially live their vision items. So this is something that I am teaching within Ascend. If you're interested in what Alex and I are doing with Ascend, you can go ahead and go to ascendyoursuccess.com. All right. So without further ado, Alex, I'd like to go ahead and continue if I can take this back over.
Yeah, let me, I wasn't able to. Okay, go for it.
E is on, by the way.
All right. I just don't know that she has host abilities to admit people. So you might have to, against your best wishes, multitask here. If you can go, if you happen to see anybody pop on.
But I'm trying my best, baby. All right. So what my idea was is I spent 2 or 3 years from about 2013, 2014 on when I really came into the idea that my vision was going to be to snowbird first in Southeast Florida. The winter of 2016. So that ended up coming to fruition, and me and my family moved to Southeast Florida in the West Palm Beach area in 2016, January through April that year. My idea was to, in planning for that and writing out the vision for that snowbird season, my one of the things that I had on there was to drive a Tesla for free while I live in Florida. And that was an actual thing that I hand wrote into my vision for while I was living here. Now, I did come up with several different ways that I could potentially do it. And I tried one of the ways. I was going to use like a friend's self-directed IRA account. And I was going to buy something cheap and then drive it for 4 months and give it back. But then I actually went and I test drove a Tesla. And I realized that I would not want to drive one for 4 months and then have to give it back. So that wasn't going to work for me. And keep in mind, this is 2016, and you know, not too many Teslas were on the road at that time. So buying one cheap was a very hard thing to do, right? All right, next bullet point there. Okay, so here's the problem, though. The car costs $100,000, right? Now, here's the caveat that I'll give you, is I did have the cash to buy it outright. Now, some of you are going to shut off right now and you're going to say, oh man, well, I don't have $100,000 to buy a Tesla, so I can't do this. That's not necessarily true. Okay. Come to me. I'll teach you how to flip houses, get you $100,000, and then you'll be able to implement a strategy. Now, here's the thing. I didn't want to waste that money that I had on a depreciating toy. Everybody sees that, right? I pay $100,000 for a car today. Next month, it's worth 80. The following month, it's worth 60, right? Not quite, but you get the idea, right? So I kept thinking and asking myself the question, how can I use real estate to allow me to drive a brand new Tesla for free? So here's what I did. I bought a light fixer-upper townhouse in Maryland for $81,000, and the house needed around $20,000 in rehab. Does everybody see how 81 plus 20 is my $100,000?
It's actually 101, but who's counting? Whatever, right?
Thanks, Alex. So everybody sees that's right around the same amount, right? So what I did is I went ahead and I bought that house cash with $100,000, right? I bought it for with 80, and then I used the 20 of the leftover cash to purchase and rehab the house, not the car. So I went then, next bullet point here. So I financed the car then at $70,000 at 1.9% for 5 years with a monthly payment that includes insurance of $1,327.03. Okay, next bullet point, please. I rented the house out immediately once it was ready for $1,500 a month. So now, what about that $30,000? So some of you guys are asking about the $30,000, the difference between the 70 and then the 30 is 100, right? So I received $10,500 between the federal and state tax credits. Those are the electric vehicle tax credits. One of my real estate companies bought the car, and so I got depreciation as a result. I get to depreciate the car for tax purposes, right? Interest, insurance, and maintenance are all deductions. So here's still more to this. The townhouse is worth $215,000, okay? As the loan balance, it gets paid down. The rents on the house go up while the car depreciates, the house appreciates. Everybody sees that? Here, let's zero out this $30,000 because some of you number crunchers out there are still hung up on this. So you got the $30,000 down payment. We subtract out the $10,500 in the tax credits. I had a Honda Accord at the time. Yes, I went from a Honda Accord to a Tesla. Everybody thinks that's funny, like there's some value ladder vehicle in between. $4,500 for selling that. The depreciation, the actual, I don't know. I'd have to ask my CPA, but it's significant. Okay. And then the interest deduction is around $5,000-ish over 5 years of the loan. So that zeros me out on the 30K. Everybody see that? So here's the net. I'm getting paid $173 per month to drive a Tesla. I actually haven't updated this. I now get over $1,600 for that unit. Okay.
What?
Yeah. So I'm actually making, it's probably closer to $300. Now I have an asterisk here, and that I'll get to in a second. The equity in my car is $115,000. The equity is in the house, right? And next bullet point here. Once the car is paid off, the house will continue to generate the rents. You see that? Yeah. So I hold onto the asset. I continue to receive the rents from that, and I can apply it to whatever I want. Now, some of you number crunchers out there realize that here's my asterisk. I'm not accounting in these numbers for vacancy and repair, and I'm not under the illusion that those aren't real numbers. In fact, they are. But even if it was breaking even or slightly less per month, you can see how that's still a pretty good way to go, especially when you consider the equity in the car there. All right. So now we can get onto the next slide there, Alex. So what are some other uses for the compartmentalized rentals here? So here's a question that I asked myself when my first child was born many years ago. When she was around 1 or 2 years old, I said, how can I get someone else to pay for her education, her college education? And I asked this again very early on. And what are some other uses that you can think of, Alex? Anything else?
I'm sorry.
I did that, by the way, Alex. I bought a rental property when she was 2 years old. And okay. So I take the cash flow from the rental, put that in a college savings for her, and I crunch the numbers. And the bottom line is that between the cash flow and then the value of the property, it will more than pay for 4 years of her education at a solid school.
Love it. Love it. And that, by the way, Steve, man, that's something to highlight. That's something that everybody should be asking. I recently shared that with one of our Ascend members is during the one-on-one, I said, you should ask yourself whatever you want. How can you get somebody else to pay for it? What can you do that doesn't take you out of your lane, doesn't take you away from your vision, that someone else will pay for whatever it is you want, whether it's a toy, whether it's an experience, whatever it might be. So that's always ask yourself better questions. Your brain's going to come up with the right answers.
110%. It's great. So, you know, some people say when I do this talk live, I get people to throw, you know, other ideas out there, but obviously some people say a boat. Some people will say a second home. Some people will say charity, you know? So you can really kind of use this however you want. I've got a fun little example that I'll go into here real quick and then we'll move on. So this is a thought that I've had a lot recently. So the date night fund, Alex, you ready for this, buddy?
I don't know that I am ready for it, but go for it.
What if we were to compartmentalize a rental where 100% of those rents would go into a special separate account with a debit card that only accesses that account, right? So you've just got one account, one debit card for that account. The only rule is that you have to bring that account down to zero every single month and spend all of it on date nights throughout the month. So let's just say in my example, I'm now getting $1,600 a month for the rent. It's a comparable rental, right? I paid $100,000 for this rental. I'm getting $1,600 a month for it. It's worth $215. I got $115,000 worth of equity in my date night fund, so to say, right? And my date night equity anyway. But the what we're actually doing is we're spending $1,600 a month on date night. Alex, how many Wagyu steaks can you eat for $1,600 a month?
Wagyu, I don't know, man. Maybe what, five a month? But either way, you're gonna have a hell of a my math is right. Five a month.
$300.
But either way, happy wife, happy life, right?
There you go. Well, hey, let's talk about that for a second. So I want to just talk to all the guys on the call for a second. All right. So if you're a woman, you have one of two options right now. You can go ahead and you can continue to listen to this, or you can stick your fingers in your ears and you can go, I, and pretend like you're not listening for a few minutes. Okay. All right. Fair warning. Ready? Guys, I got some advice for you. Ready? I figured out a secret. When I take my wife shopping and then take her out to a really nice dinner, it makes for a really nice date night. You know what I'm saying? Follow me? I see you guys smiling, Josh Bacon. I see you, man. Moving on.
There you go.
Let's talk about the third concept here. So let's talk about living life on vacation, baby. So James Schramko has got this great book, Work Less, Make More. Alex, did you ever get that book?
Yeah. Really good book.
You did? Okay, good. Yep. Awesome. Man, I'm going to have to return your Christmas present then.
Oh, whoa. For you
this year.
Sorry. Just kidding. Huh? Just kidding.
Oh, you did read it or you didn't? Because I got you a copy. No, I just ruined it.
Send it over.
All right. So he says, true success is not being at the beach with your laptop. It's being at the beach without your laptop.
Love that.
How many people are on Facebook right now posting pictures of themselves working at their kid's soccer game or at the beach, and they're fooling themselves saying, hey, man, this is work-life balance, right?
A buddy of mine is on a cruise right now and just posted a picture of the sea, and he's on his laptop. So, yep, I see it all the time.
What the hell, man? Okay. Location independent income, that seems to be something that's like really sexy, like a lot of people really striving for. In this day and age, it can be had, right? So here are my famous feet here by, this is in my backyard, looking out my back door here, living life on vacation. So how do you live life on vacation? I've got this quote, this concept that came to me a number of years ago, where I come up with the idea that giving yourself permission to relax is better than relaxation itself. Think about that for a second. Giving yourself permission to relax is better than relaxation itself.
Elaborate.
So what does that speak to? So the question then becomes, what does that speak to? It speaks to mindset. What we're talking about here is a vacation is a mindset that's cultivated by mixing freedom from time and money demands with relaxation. Does that make sense? And as far as like the permission to relax is better than relaxation itself, think about the scenario. You want to relax, right? And whether that's go in your backyard and put your feet up and watch the water, you know, ebb and flow, or read a book or whatever the case might be. If you can get to the point in your mind where you say, you know what, I've done enough work for today. I fulfilled all my obligations and I'm happy with what I've done today. I'm going to go out back and I'm going to read that book now. Aren't you in that moment more relaxed?
Mm-hmm. It's true.
You've given yourself permission to relax. So yes, the act of going and relaxing is relaxing, but what exacerbates or allows the situation to unfold is the permission you've given yourself to relax. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's all really mindset.
That's really powerful when you sit down and you think about it. It's actually a profound thought. The permission to relax is better than relaxation itself. By the way, you just quoted yourself, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know.
That's a boss move right there.
That's how I roll. All right. So cultivate a mindset of relaxation. So let's talk about this. So this is, again, for me, this is my list. Your list may be quite different. But for me, my list is yoga. Is very important for me. Meditation, working out, exercise is essential. Reading, being outdoors. I love the sunshine. Got to get it on my skin. Family time at the beach, in the pool, playing guitar, prayer, all very important. So let's talk about LL finances.
Throwing some Wagyu steaks for the pardo on the grill.
Hanging out with the pardos, you know. Absolutely. So let's talk about finances. So the idea is obviously to have your assets pay for your lifestyle, right? So that's known as financial freedom. That's not a new concept that I'm really probably sharing with anybody here today. Whoops, Alex, did I have a second bullet point there? There we go.
Dream funds.
So yeah. So this is something that I've done for many years now. So Carrie and I, we will contribute to what we call our dream fund, and I fund this annually. And this allows us to pay for vacations or anything like that, regardless of what's going on inside the business at any given time, right? So if you're able to event, now this is not an emergency fund. This is a dream fund. This is there to fund your live life on vacation aspirations. So let's pull this thing all together, folks. So we talked very first at the very first part of this about the blank canvas, being the artist of your life, creating that vision as a result. And then test your vision. So for me, this is Snowbird Flipper. Here's a book that I wrote about my Snowbird Flipper experience and how I got there, called How to Create a Real Life 10-Hour Work Week. Snowbirdflipper.com if you're interested in a free copy of that book. And then execute the vision. And then I just had a quick plug in there for the Master Mission, which at this point it's full, so it's not even worth talking about. But I just wanted to show you Alex's face and the fact that everyone's looking at him on that picture too.
Why does that always happen, by the way?
I don't know. It's PJ.
Yeah.
All right. So, folks, welcome to the counterculture here. What we are talking about is countercultural. Can you see that, Alex? That what we've been talking about is countercultural, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's the thing. We owe it to ourselves to live countercultural lives. Do you not agree? It's all about not doing what other people are doing. Put another way, it's all about doing something different. I was recently, go back for a second. So all Steve does is yoga all day, go to yoga all day. So recently I was at Friday nights in our neighborhood, we have this fun little thing at the clubhouse where like bands play and you know, everybody gets together and has a good Friday night together. And it's a lot of fun. And so we're hanging out and a lot of people that live in my neighborhood, like wonder what I do. Right. And so, the one woman's there and she's been to the same yoga class that I go to, every Tuesday and Thursday. And I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but it got around to basically like what I do. And this one woman interrupts and she's like, Steve doesn't do anything. All Steve does is go to yoga all day.
Sometimes so. I think the same thing, by the way, so I don't blame her.
You took the words out of my mouth, man. I was going to say Alex probably thinks the same thing. But go. I love that. I love that that's what people think I do. All right. Next slide. All right. So here's the thing. If Chicken Trophy Steve Kavanaugh can do all this stuff, here's me in front of the Palm Beach Hotel. I own a unit that is up here on this, I don't know, I'm pointing like you guys can see, but it's up on the second floor there. It's one of 12 out of the building of almost 300 units that has an ocean view from the terrace there, which is like a 10 by 12 terrace. This building is on the, good grief. This is so wonky. This building is on the National Historic Register of Historic Places, built in 1925, and is on Palm Beach Island, which is like the Beverly Hills of the East Coast. And so anyway, if I can go from winning a chicken trophy in 1987 to owning a unit in the Palm Beach Hotel, Ocean View unit in Palm Beach Hotel on Palm Beach Island, then you guys can do it too. So my challenge to you today is this: take a risk and design that life that you want to live with what you have available to you today. Remember bricolage. Here's the thing. Risk always pays off. So Tim Ferriss in The Tribe of Mentors says, there's no radical creative choices that do not carry with them an inherent risk of equally radical failure. You cannot do anything great without aggressively courting your own limits and the limits of your ideas. Avoiding risk of failure means avoiding transcendent creative leaps forward. You can't have one without the other.
Yep.
I want to just revisit bricolage really quickly here. In college, told you guys I played a lot of guitar in college. I had a guitar rig and it was very simple. It was a Fender Stratocaster into like a PV amp. You probably don't know what this means if you're not in the guitar world, but the bottom line is it's cheap stuff, right? I worked on that rig until I got it to where it sounded really awesome. But I was always pining for better gear as I got older and as I started to make more money. I started to work a real job, started to get real money coming in. So I slowly started to replace my old bad gear with newer, sexier, more expensive, you know, higher quality gear. So what ultimately happened was kind of funny.
There you go.
What happened was funny, right? Once I obtained that gear, I listened to old recordings and I wanted to sound like my old self again with the new gear. And I had gone and sold all that. I had replaced all that gear with all this new expensive gear. So I ultimately yearned for that old sound, right? Alex, what was the last thing on that?
Here.
All right. So here's the thing. So it's not about the gear. The takeaway is it's not about the gear. It's not about the stuff. It's not about the stuff that you bring into your life. It's essentially about what you can create with what you have available to you, just like a true bricolore. So what if I told you that your vision is available to you right now with the effort and time that you already have? What if I told you that all it took to live your ideal life can be created with the resources that you already have available to you? Guys, you're a lifestyle artist. Be the bricolore of your own life and paint your masterpiece today. Boom.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Hopefully that has resonated with people. And it, like you said, it's, I think I used the word counterintuitive. I think in your slide, you use countercultural of, you know, bigger is better and grind and hustle. And I want to be clear and highlight one of the things that you made very clear, hopefully, was that you're not against hard work. Hard work is important. You got to work hard and you got to work smart, but you do it in a very focused, intentional way. Right? Your office hours, you said, are 11 to 4. I can attest to the fact that you live that and you honor that. And you put life first and you put what's important to you first. And then you design a business to support that. And, you know, you have a picture here. This picture means a lot to me because of just the time and effort we've put into really vetting the right types of people into the first group of Ascend, and we're almost full with our second group of Ascend. And from time to time, I have people reach out to me and ask me, what is Ascend really about? You know, and this was 100% content only. And so I don't want to violate that. I want to remain within integrity, but you know, I do want to just take a quick second to give a shameless plug, because if you've been on here for well over an hour now, and it looks like every single person that has gotten on for the most part has stayed on, and any of this, the mindset, the philosophy, if any of this resonates with you, I just encourage you to reach out to us and apply. AscendYourSuccess.com. This isn't a sales call. There's not a pitch. If you wanted to join on that interview, you're not even able to join. That's not what this is about. We have taken the time to really make sure that we're putting the right people into these groups. And like I said, we are almost full in our second group. And so if you've been on here and any of this resonates with you, I want to encourage you to just go to AscendYourSuccess.com and apply. And I promise you that even if you're not interested in joining, you're going to walk away with some value. You're going to get something out of that call. So really appreciate you guys taking the time to tune in here. If you have any questions, I want to open it up now. You can type them into the chat box, or I can even get you on here live if you want to chat with us. So any questions, Steven, I'm going to kick it over to you while some questions are coming in, if anybody does have any questions. And I don't know if you have any final thoughts or anything to tie up. I know you recently presented this in front of about 100 people. So I'm very curious what kind of questions people had that that you might be able to answer and kind of jump the gun here. Some people. So Adrian, love the presentation, Steve. So many great takeaways. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. So Cav, let me turn it over to you, man. What were some of the questions that you were getting when you presented this at the summit?
Sure. So yeah, I'm happy to answer that in 1 second. Let me just tell anybody who's watching on the Facebook Live here, if you guys want to type in your questions, I'd be happy to go ahead and answer any of those questions on the Facebook Live here. So for those of you guys that just joined up, Tyrus, what's happening, man? Any of you guys who just hopped on, any questions you guys want to ask about any of the stuff that we have gone over here today, please type those questions in, and Alex and I are committed to answering each and every one of your questions here before we wrap up today. So yeah, Alex, great question. One of the questions that I had from a woman in the audience said, you know, what if I can't even get to the point of developing a vision, because essentially I can't remember exactly what her holdup was, but it had something or another to do with essentially the fact that, I don't want to say her past, but she had too many like limiting beliefs, basically, Alex. So, hey, look, I've got a belief about this and I got a belief about that. So she was putting these limiting beliefs out there that said, that were saying, I can't even get to the point of developing the vision that I want to have because of these problems, right? So Alex, as a coach, what would be your feedback in that scenario? And then I'll tell you what I told her.
Man,
you didn't listen to the question. It's all right. It's
fine. You have horrible timing, because I am replying back to Carolina, who has a question. I'm going to get her on here. So impeccable timing to ask me when I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, no problem, brother. Right. Hey, what you just did there was basically my elementary school career. So that's fine. That's exactly what it looked like when I got called on.
I don't know if that's a compliment or a dig, but go ahead.
No, I'm just messing with you.
I know.
But anyway, so basically she said, hey, look, I can't do this vision stuff without all this brain stuff that I have going on. What do I do? So my question to her was, you know, look, if this was a coaching session and this wasn't in front of 120 people, I would ask you, what are the limiting beliefs? And we would start to dig in there, but it's not. So I said, here's what you have to do. You have to not write a vision based on today or yesterday. You have to write a vision based on tomorrow. So you have to look to the future and you have to say, if everything in my life could look 110% the way that I want it to look, what would it look like? You cannot use the filter of today or yesterday to write that vision. It has to be 110% tomorrow. So what would that look like? And then and only then can you work back from that vision. See, many times what we try to do is we try to build the vision and we try to work toward it. We try to set the steps out in front of us. And that makes sense, but that's not the way it works. The way it works is to come up with that end vision, that end goal of mind, and then to work backward from that. And that's the work that Alex and I do in Ascend, is helping people nail that.
Yep. Hey, I'm going to get Carolina on for a second. She's got a really, really good question here, which you can check it out in the chat box. But let me see if I can get her on here live. Where are you, Carolina? Where are you, my friend? Where are you? And then I know Amir has a question. All right, let me just see if I can find her here.
Okay. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Carolina, good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Steve, going back to schedule, which is like the worst part in real estate. Don't you think that it has to do with demographics and demand? As much as you want people to respect your schedule, don't you think that we are a little pressured by demand and the way we practice our profession as well? Or you should just put the boundaries in and people need to adjust to that?
Yeah, that's a really great story. That's a really great question. And I can tell you a story that I learned before I implemented all this stuff. My coach actually had told me he got to the point in his career where his cell phone was ringing off the hook. He couldn't let it go. Morning, noon, and night, his cell phone was ringing, and he was doing a ton of volume. At the time, he was one of Baltimore City's top wholesalers. And he just got to the point where he said, you know what? I can't handle this anymore. I'm going to leave my cell phone in my office drawer at the end of the day. I'm going to turn it off and just put it in my office drawer. And then I'll pick it back up when I come back into the office tomorrow morning, but I'm not taking it home with me. And I'm not basically going to have my cell phone even on during these hours that I am out of the office. You know what happened to his income almost immediately?
What?
It shot up. It went up. And again, he was one of the biggest wholesalers in Baltimore City at the time. Everyone needed to get in touch with him. And quite frankly, he needed to get in touch with everyone else. But that made him really do that 80-20 analysis and figure out what the 20% of his activities were or could be or should be, and then delegate out the rest.
Carolina, do you mind if I, because obviously I know you very well, you're a good friend, and I'm a client of yours. And just to give, you know, I think Steve a little bit of background, Carolina is a very, very successful realtor and broker here in Miami, and she's got a lot of clients. And I think the challenge, Carolina, it's more maybe a mindset of putting boundaries. And if your clients call you or reach out to you, you know, past your hours, you feel like you need to be there for them. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So Steve, can you kind of specifically address that? Like in Carolina's situation where, you know, she's in a customer service business where, you know, her clients hire her to sell their real estate. And when they call or text at 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night or on weekends, again, she has that, she feels obligated to respond and be there for them. So can you kind of share your thoughts on how she can maybe shift her mindset to still be there for them and at the same time have boundaries that she can honor so that she could be there for her family and, you know, do the things that's most important to her?
Yeah. So those are all good stuff. I don't see it as much of a mindset thing, Alex. I see it more of a setting expectations thing. So I look at it from a couple of different angles. I think one of the very first things that I do when somebody comes into my deal coaching program and wants to work with me on a deal coaching basis is I set the expectations. I say, look, my office hours are Monday through Friday, 11 to 4. Is that a problem for you? Yes or no? You know, essentially is what I'm asking them through the conversation. If that's a problem, we might not be a good fit to work together, in which case you're free to go work with another coach. In your case, if that's a problem for you, that I have a family and a life outside of this business, and I might not be here at your beck and call. Hey, look, I can recommend all these, I can refer you out to all these other real estate agents if that's an option for you. And I'm not suggesting that it needs to be, but if you want to embrace this philosophy, I would probably be leaning heavily in that direction. Now, pay attention to what I said. When it is time to work, when you are working within your office hours, it is 110% up to you to work like a total dog during those hours and don't give up. Be relentless. Pursue those clients with the best of your ability in that time that you've allocated. And then remember the addition by subtraction. If you have the bottom 10% of people who are calling you morning, noon, and night, and that's just not acceptable for you, fire them. Because what you're going to find is that you're wasting a lot of your the essence of your efficiency, the essence of you, your life on people that are in the bottom 10%. If you get rid of them, you're automatically now going to screen in new people through this new filter of these new setting expectations, right? Hey, look, these are the hours that I work and I don't take calls outside of it. Like, they can't call their attorney at midnight. They shouldn't expect their attorney to call them back at midnight or whatever the case might be. Why should they expect you to do that? It's only because you've allowed that through not setting the expectation up front. At least that's my assumption anyway. So Those would be the three things from my presentation that I would probably coach you on if I were your coach to try to get that scenario to take place. But I really think 100% of it, or a large part of it, comes down to setting the expectations up front, not taking on the clients that are not going to honor your expectations up front, only taking on the clients that are going to do it. And that allows you to be the worker and the person that you want to be within the hours that you've given yourself to work. Then you have to honor that. You have to honor that.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Carolina.
Was that helpful?
Yes, very helpful.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Awesome. Hey, let me see if I can get Amir on here. Amir, if you want, unmute yourself. Carolina, again, thanks for the question. I know that's something that we've talked about and a lot
McCall,
of people.
Joe McCall, what's up, buddy? Sorry, Joe popped on the live here.
Who, Joe McCall?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, let me see. So Bobby, thanks, Josh. Company of One by Paul Jarvis, which, by the way, that one I haven't read. I got to check that out. So,
good book.
Okay, cool. Amir, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, I know you got a question. It's better to get you on here live.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so my question was, as far as if you want to get big by growing bigger, what things should you focus on in order not to create a chaotic business culture?
That's a great question. Let me kind of jump in there. I have some thoughts. Steve recommended the book Traction by Gino Wickman. One of the things that Adrian's on here, you know, who's our COO, and he was a big part of us implementing Traction. One of the things we learned a couple of years ago is, number one, you have to have a business that's based on core values. You have to figure out what your core values are. I kind of equate it to the foundation of a house. It's hard to build a house without a foundation. And if you build one and it's rocky, it's going to fall. So if you want to get big, or even if you want to stay small, I truly believe that your business needs to operate on core values. And they can't be core values that you just kind of pluck out of thin air because they sound good. Like, hey, you know, I want to operate in integrity, or I want to, you know, it has to be things that truly resonate with you. And in that book, Traction, it walks you through exercises on determining what your actual core values are. And then I think the second thing that comes to mind for me, Amir, is that you have to develop, whether you realize it or not, your business is going to have a culture. Now, is the culture going to be intentional, or is it just going to happen because, you know, cultures always are born, and the question is, are you going to foster the culture you want, or is it just going to happen because your business is operating and the culture is just going to happen with or without you? I think you got to be very intentional about the types of people that you're going to bring into your organization. Do they match your core values? Are they going to uplift and support your culture, or are they going to tear it down? So getting big or staying small with any business, I think, number one, you got to have the right core values that really resonate with you and the type of business you want. And I think having a business plan, having a vision for your business is instrumental to that process. And number two, really think about what type of culture you want within your business, and then go out and find the type of people that match those values and that culture.
Okay. Thank you.
But read Traction. Traction, and if you really want to take it a step further, Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. So anyone that wants to grow a big company, I would recommend those two books for sure.
But Amir, in your case, since you are a coaching student of Ascend, I would highly recommend that you seek Ascend counsel offline before you dive too deep in any of that stuff. You know, remember the concept of revenue generating activities first and foremost. And we always, always, always want to see newer investors and really seasoned investors always looking for the fastest path to cash.
Yep. By the way, Steve, man, I don't want anybody to get off this and think that we're against getting big. That's not what we're saying at all. If you want to get big and it's for your reasons, by all means, like, it's out there. You can create the kind of company that you want. Just make sure it's not because you're seeing it from a different lens. In other words, right? Like, so often I think we look at Facebook and we see what people have and the deals they're doing and the checks they're posting and the lifestyle they might be showing and the Ferraris and the Lamborghinis, but you don't know what's behind that, right? So don't just, if that's what you truly want and that's in your vision, go get it, because it's possible and you can do it. Mm-hmm. But just make sure that you're not trying to live somebody else's vision and you're ultimately doing what's going to make you happy. I think that's what it really boils down to.
Right.
Okay. Scott, this has been great, guys. I have to run, but thank you enough for sharing your knowledge and expertise. Appreciate you taking the time, Scott. Josh, brother, I have to run. This was an incredible presentation. Josh, thank you, brother. I look forward to connecting with you. I know we have our one-on-one next month, so thank you, Josh. Guys, any other questions before we wrap this up? If not,
Brittany on the live says, best decision we ever made.
Oh, that's super cool. Love Brittany and Leon. They're awesome. Okay. Awesome, guys. Well, hey, listen, it doesn't end here. If you have any questions, whether it's about the presentation or anything else, reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook. You can shoot me an email, alex@flipempire.com. Cav, you wanna plug your email?
Yeah, just, it's my name, stevecavanaugh@gmail.com. Steve Cavanaugh, CAVANAUGH@gmail.com.
Yep. Happy to connect, guys, if you have any questions. And if you are interested in what we're doing with Ascend and you see the value in a hybrid coaching and mastermind group that's not just based on business, but it starts with life first. AscendYourSuccess.com. We schedule an interview and go from there. And like I said, I promise you, you'll walk away with some value, whether you get extended an invite or not. So appreciate you guys taking the time. And just reach out to us if you have any questions.
Thanks, Kat, guys.
Thank you, brother.
Use the hashtag LLOV. Love you guys.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
Have a good one.
All right, my friends. So that's a wrap on the art and science of hashtag LLOV. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you may have taken away or from the training, from the podcast, what maybe resonated with you. Are you thinking a little bit different? You know, you're never going to hear me to think small. I always want you to think big, but make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. Make sure that, make sure that you're not just hustling and grinding for the sake of hustling and grinding, because that's what you hear, in the mainstream media. And that's what you hear, at least in our world of personal development, right? Just make sure that you're crystal clear. You have crystal clear goals, what you want. And then, a written action plan, and make sure that you're surrounded by the right types of people. That's exactly why we created Ascend about 8 months ago and why we are almost completely full in our second group. If any of the content resonated with you, anything I've shared on any podcast episode, any interaction we may have had in the past, if you want to be surrounded by the right types of people, people that are successful, people that think that think a certain way, where anything is possible, and it's not just about business and making more money, but it's about having a better life, better quality relationships, giving, impact. You know, the four core values that Ascend lives by is, number one, you got to have integrity. Okay, that having integrity is first and foremost. Number two, we need people that are going to be real, people that are going to be authentic, share what's really going on. Number three, people that value personal development and understand that this is an ongoing thing, and it's who you become in the process. It's the journey, not necessarily the destination. And number four, people that desire to make an impact. You know, we want to influence and impact the right people that have the desire to go out and improve the people in their life, improve their environment, their community, et cetera. That's how we're going to be able to reach more people and impact the world, as cheesy and corny as it may sound. And then finally, there's three C's we live by: people that are committed, people that are coachable, and people that are going to be contributors. So if you have any interest in just having a conversation, this is not a sales call. It's actually an interview, and I promise you, you'll walk away with value, whether you get extended an invite or not. There's no, you know, you can't even join on that call. So if you just want to set up a call and chat with us about it, it's only about 30 minutes or so. Head over to ascendyoursuccess.com and click, watch that short video, click on the apply button, and we'll schedule an interview. So my friends, appreciate you. Thank you so much. If you have zero interest in Ascend, that's perfectly fine. Make sure you subscribe to the Flip Empire Show. Make sure you continue to tune in so you get notified when new episodes are released every Monday, every Thursday. And, you know, share this with somebody if it's impacted you in any way. So I appreciate you, and I'm looking forward to hopping on the next one here. Talk to you soon.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.